Ryan Ershog from TSN joins us. Shar, how are you?
I'm good. My golf year last year was very frustrating. Two of my first three rounds of the year were a couple of the best rounds I'd ever played and didn't even get close for the rest of the year. Not even within eight strokes the rest of the year. Like, I went unconscious the first, like, couple of the first rounds, and then never even got close to it. It was painful. It was frustrating. It was terrible.
You know, I golf minimal last year. I spent most of my time biking, and at the way I see it now, with young Beckett around, not sure I'll be getting out from any golf rounds.
If it was 14 holes,
yeah, I've said that.
If it was 14 holes,
like nine even.
Yeah,
you can get out for nine, maybe.
Yeah, I tell you what though, you gotta, as a dad, if you want to golf, and trust me, I'm a veteran at this, you gotta go early morning. It's the only time you can get on the course by 6:30. I can get 18 holes in at Broadmoor in, like, just jump in a cart, and I can get 18 holes in 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah, the problem with that, Shogger, is I get up every morning with Beckett, so then that means I have to tell my wife that she can't sleep in. So then I'm in the doghouse just for that.
Pick one day a week. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
I'm sure. I mean,
My interest in golf has waned the last year. I like my annual guys trip where we go and we hang out, we play some poker, we golf three rounds in a few days. I love that, but just I find I get more out of it. I'd go biking for 2 hours.
What are you going to do with all your pants then? You got you got a lot of pairs of really flashy golf pants.
No, I really only have two. And you know what? I save those for the golf trip, so they're in perfect shape. You know, they're nicely pressed and we're ready to go.
Lime green. I recall the lime green.
Those are my favorite golf pants. I love those.
I remember those.
They look awesome. And I've dominated when I wear those too. So they're pretty intimidating for the guys I play with. That's all I know. So.
Distracting, you mean?
Well, I know, because
there's nothing intimidating about
just because my rear end looks so good in them. That's what happens.
Oh, boy.
Let's move on to tonight's hockey game.
Yes. What
can you say? Like, this, there's every reason to not expect the Edmonton Oilers to be in this game.
Well, remember last week when we talked and I said I thought the Oilers were going to steal a point out of L.A. and they were going to bounce back. And then they got absolutely obliterated, So I was made to look foolish with that prediction. So I'm not going to side with them this time. Yeah, I mean, despite the fact that the Kings played last night, and I don't know. I mean, the West Coast back-to-back, Matt, has to be the toughest, where you go Vancouver the night before with the 7:30 or whatever start, and then you lose the hour coming a province over. And it's a quick turnaround. What's that Vancouver then Edmonton or Calgary back to back like?
I don't think it's awful. And because you're out of there pretty quick, you're not having to, like, when you have to. The tough thing when you're changing that is when you're changing countries, like when you're going from Canada to the States, just because you have to go through the airport as opposed to being able to essentially drive up to the plane, get on, and leave. I don't think it's awful because it's not like a 2 or 3 hour time change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that long of a flight. So you're in at a decent time. That being said, at this point in the season, and that hour can make a big difference. It really can. Yeah. So in this situation, I don't think it'll kill them. Like, I don't think it's going to be that terrible, but it certainly brings challenges. They probably won't skate or didn't skate, I'm assuming. Or
no,
had an
they
optional,
canceled their morning skate today.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. You want to get guys sleeping in. And then, not that I'm a big fan of pregame skates anyways. I think you just waste energy. But I don't know. I don't think that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah. Well, they'll be motivated, right? I can't imagine Daryl Sutter was thrilled with dropping a point. And so, yeah, I mean, they're not do or die, but it's getting to that for the Kings now. And the Oilers are right for the pick. And, I mean, man, that blue line. Holy smokes. So between Ryan Nugent Hopkins not being available, between the blue line looking the way it's looking. Now, you never know. I mean, Bachman has shown he can steal a game from these guys. His career numbers against the Kings are ridiculous. So that probably gives him a puncher's chance, but it'll have to be Bachman standing on his head if the Oilers have a chance.
Oh, yeah, he'd have to do exactly what he did last year when he stopped 47 of 48 shots just to get to regulation. And when you look at the Edmonton Oilers, you know, their inability to stop 5-on-5 goals, right? That's been their Achilles heel again this year. 192, most in the league. Only one team in the history of the 30-team NHL has allowed 200. That was Philadelphia in 2007. And the Oilers, very good chance.
That's a good stat, yeah.
That's a very good chance that could happen over the next 3 days, especially just when you look at their decimated blue line.
Well, for sure. But, I mean, never mind their decimated blue line to end the season here. How about their blue line for the entire season? And, again, this goes back to what the core problems are on this team. And I just really believe that until they have an NHL caliber defense, it's hard to judge much else on the team. I mean, they've got to get the goaltending fixed, but the defense is really that night in, night out, it just hasn't been good enough. And it hasn't been good enough for a number of years. And as a direct result, the team has not been even close. I can't stress enough how critical improvement on the back end is. And sitting around waiting for draft picks to develop and turn into those guys, it's not going to be good, because it's going to take too long for some of these young players to be good enough. So they're going to have to find a trade. They're going to have to maybe surprise people with a signing. They're going to have to expedite the process, because waiting for Darnell Nurse to be a top-pairing defenseman, well, now you're getting into the final year or two of Taylor Hall's deal before that happens, and Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and these guys. They have to improve it sooner rather than later.
Well, yeah, I'm just not sure how they can sooner than later.
Yeah.
Right? That's the tough part about it. You know, McTavish, or who's ever, you know, McTavish and company, who's ever making those decisions this summer. I'm curious to see if they remain patient or if they try to go for broke as far as off-season acquisitions.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're just going to sit on their hands and I think they would not extending it to have a lot of to go out and team. So I they're nothing. I don't think they can look at their blue line and possibly say, yeah, we have the tools we need to compete next. They have to know that they need to add. Now, what they think they need to add is maybe up for debate. You know, whether they feel they need two top pairing defensemen or just one, or whether they're comfortable playing Klefbom against the other team's best players right from the word go next year. I don't know that that's all that wise, but I mean, if I were them, I would be out there looking for, I think you probably have to examine Mike Green and see what the number looks like, see what the contract looks like and how that works. Because if there is a possibility to get that player, well, now maybe you have a little bit of mobility with some other guys you can move. Maybe then you can trade a Justin Schultz, right? Or you can make some other moves. Maybe it's a big shutdown guy like Adam McQuaid. I think they need to look at some options of guys that can come in and play in their top four and spend some money. I don't think they can just sit on their hands and wait for Darnell Nurse and Martin Marincin to come along and turn corners.
Here's an interesting thought. What if Pittsburgh loses, doesn't make the playoffs, Oilers somehow manage to get their hands on another first overall pick? Obviously, they would take McDavid. Do you think they move either him or one of their big three right away to try and secure, even if they can't get a Mike Green? Or say they get a Mike Green and they trade for another defenseman anyways.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if the Oilers, like, I mean, Connor McDavid is the game changer, right? Then all of a sudden everything changes. So now, now you got Connor McDavid into the mix. And again, the percentages are fairly low, but let's go there. So they get Connor McDavid in the mix. Now you've got Nugent Hopkins signed to a long-term deal. You've got a third overall pick in Leon Draisaitl coming. You've got Lander signed in another year with Boyd Gordon, right? That's a lot. And so, you know, what they could possibly do is maybe they move Leon Draisaitl. Maybe they, you know, water themselves down a little bit down the middle and look for some help on the back end with that. Maybe that's all of a sudden a trade they can make. With Connor McDavid there, maybe all of a sudden you can move Jordan Eberle for a top pairing defenseman. Those all become possibilities. So McDavid isn't a game changer. He's a game changer for anybody who gets him, but in particular for the Oilers, because they do have a reasonable amount of skill up front. So if that happens, now, if it's the fourth overall pick or the third overall pick and it's Strome, I don't think you start firing prospects out of town because you got Dylan Strome coming to save the day. He's not necessarily the immediate high-end help that Connor McDavid would be. So if it ends up being Strome, and I just have this funny feeling that's who we're going to be talking about, the Oilers having picked. Now you've got Nugent Hopkins, you've got Dreisaitl coming, you've got Strome coming, you've got Lander signed. You know, they're looking pretty good. I don't know that you're going to start trading forwards, though, because you've drafted Strome.
What if you looked at trading Strome, though, even in that situation where, say, you get him and you need to, I mean, you know you need to shore up your defense. You have, looking at it, you have all the components for a very potent offense. I mean, you have a lot of young, highly skilled players, and if you give them that support in the back end, it'll really free them up to be able to be more creative and to, you know, just have the puck more often. You know, when you have defensemen that are taking the puck away from the other team and getting it to your forwards, I mean, you're going to generate more offense and keep pucks out of your own net. Could you see them doing something like that, where if they get them, to move them and try to maybe package them with someone else to bring in another defenseman?
I think what you're saying makes sense, Matt, but I think the problem is I think once Craig McTavish arrives in Florida for the draft and they're sitting there talking about these players and they realize that they've got a chance to add this guy to the organization, I don't know that any deal comes along that entices him to move that guy. The draft is just all about the future and these players and how good they are. And to move a player that is as good as it sounds like this young guy is, as good as he seems to be, I just don't know that McTavish would have it in him to turn that deal, unless it's an absolute no-brainer. Unless he's standing there with, I don't know, I mean, like, what would be some possibilities? I mean, let's think about this for a second. What would be a realistic possibility? What if the Nashville Predators go to Craig McTavish and say, we want that pick, and we'll give you Seth Jones for it? Well, Seth Jones was a number one overall pick. He's, what, a 21-year-old defenseman with tons of future. They've already got Weber. I mean, they've already got, you know, a couple of top pairing guys as it is. So that is that realistic enough? Would you do Seth Jones for that pick? You probably have to consider it, but at the end of the day, if you're asking me, I think, will Craig McTavish move that pick? I don't think he will.
Yeah, I could see him not doing it. It just, to me, it intrigues me. I mean, if I was sitting down calling the shots, knowing that I wanted to improve quickly as an organization, seeing as you've had however many years of the supposed building and it just hasn't turned around. Like, I mean, I'd want to turn around right away. And that kind of where my brain goes is, if you end up in that situation, that's something you definitely, even if you didn't do it, you would actively pursue looking at to see what was out there.
Yeah. And I mean, but who would it, I mean, it all comes down to the name, right? Who's coming back? So who are the guys that you would even think about doing that for? And I think it's probably a pretty limited list of realistic possibilities of who could possibly get traded. I mean, I think Seth Jones is a realistic option. I think the Predators are that deep on the back end, and Jones is a high enough caliber prospect. I think they're getting incredible value out of the Roman Josi contract as it is, and Jones is ready to develop into certainly a second pairing or a first pairing guy. So I think there's a pretty limited number of teams, though, that would be willing to make that deal. I mean, that have defensemen that are young enough and high-end enough to turn that deal around. Now, if it happens, hey, you know, I mean, if for some reason the Pittsburgh Penguins say, we want that pick and you can have Olli Maatta, well, now you've got stuff to think about.
Yeah.
Shocker, we will see you at the rink tonight. Enjoy the game.
Okay, boys, you too.